So this work was published in two articles, one about 2 years ago now. It's where all the main ideas were formed. Another paper just recently where it was extended to more general situations. So I'll be talking about tight POVMs. Here's a short outline. First, I'll be talking about states and POVMs in real Hilbert space. So we should all be familiar with this in terms of the Bloch sphere representation. Then I'll be talking about informational completeness and the general method for state reconstruction. Then I'll define the tight POVMs. These are almost orthonormal bases for the space of quantum states. And then I'll show that tight POVMs, when they exist, describe the exact optimal class for linear tomography. So along the way, we'll learn about complex projective designs and unitary designs. So the state inversion method I'll be using is very simple. It's the simplest you can think of, but it's simple enough that you can prove something quite rigorous. And so I'm all about trying to find the optimal measurements rather than the most appropriate way to do state inversion. And in this case, you can prove something quite rigorous. So we know that states are just positive information operators acting on some complex vector space. POVMs are just sets of positive operators. But Hermitian operators live in a real Hilbert space. Let's call this H. It has dimension b squared. So when we take linear combinations of Hermitian operators, real linear combinations, we get another Hermitian operator. It's a Hilbert space. It's endowed with the Hilbert-Schmidt inner product. So I'm writing it in this form here, which induces a norm and a distance. So, but states, in fact, live in, they all have unit trace. So they, in fact, live in a fine subspace of H. So this is defined by this equation here, the inner product of I against rho. It's just a trace of rho, which is 1. So a vector subspace, for the case of a vector subspace, this would be 0. But we, in fact, have an affine subspace.
Is it self, I assume?
Yeah.
That's all my questions. Using a norm, it's a with a.
A.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Thanks.
You got that.
Sorry, thanks. Next time. So this is the picture. This is our Hilbert space H. Our states are living up here above the origin. But I want these states to live in a vector subspace, so let's put them into one. Let's define the subspace of traceless Hermitian operators, H naught. So we can prune a dimension of H just by projecting into this subspace. We can do this just by moving this set down, or so subtracting off by a distance of 1 on D, or using this projector pi naught here. So pi naught is a super operator. It's the identity super operator minus this projector onto the space spanned by the identity. So here I'm using round brackets to represent operators as vectors. It just means that by a round bracket, I'm implying the Hilbert-Schmidt inner product rather than the usual inner product. So I'll also use this notation throughout. So when I have a little zero there, that means I'm speaking about an object in this space of traceless operators. So distances are preserved when we project into this subspace. And the mapping is invertible. We can easily just lift up this space back up to where it was. So it's
the projection is, in fact, translation.
Exactly. So it's an isometric embedding. And we're all very familiar with it. States are now embedded into a ball centered at the origin of H naught. The pure states lie on the surface of the ball, and the mixed states within. So for qubits, this is, of course, just the Bloch sphere representation. So for dimension two, for qubits, the embedding is bijective, but is otherwise only injective. So it just means that not every point in the ball represents a state in higher dimensions. So PAVMs can be embedded into H0 as well. And here's a standard way of doing this. We first have to rewrite them in terms of a scalar valued trace measure, tau, and a positive operated valued density, P. So tau is just the trace of the PAVM. P is just a rescaled PAVM element. So we're just dividing by tau so that our PAVD is, so the trace of our PAVD is now 1. The tau sum to D, and our PAVM normalization condition is just a weighted sum of PAVD elements. So this makes a lot more sense when you look at the a general PAVM. In this case, you have to use the radon-nicodym derivative. So now we can just embed PAVD elements as if they were states. We do the same procedure, subtract off I on D. So here's a picture of the situation. This is a PAVM in this block, this generalized block sphere. The different sizes of these points here represent the fact that these points are weighted. And a PAVM must enclose the origin. This is just the new normalization condition. So we're thinking in these terms for a reason, and it'll become clear when we look at optimal tomography. Let's look at state reconstruction in these terms. So we know that distinct states, which belong to the span of the PAVM elements, have distinct statistics. So this just means that every PAVM is information complete with respect to the subspace, with respect to the subspace it spans. That's kind of obvious. Then state reconstruction follows a standard procedure. We define this Hermitian super operator. It's positive. And then this pseudo inverse. So this pseudo inverse is designed so it has the same support as F here. And F tilde times F is just the projector onto this support, which is the span of the PAVM elements. Next, we define a reconstruction density in terms of our pseudo inverse and our PAVD. And it satisfies this equation, this resolution of unity here. So what's happening here is R is the canonical dual frame in this space F with respect to a measure tau to the operator frame P. That's a complicated description, but this is standard stuff in frame theory. I'll talk more about frames later, but for the moment, just note that if we multiply on the right by rho on this resolution, we get a state reconstruction formula in terms of probabilities and the reconstruction density. So that's the standard way of doing things. It's what everyone does, but maybe it's a bit obscure in this notation. Yeah, the RX, they trace to 1, but they're not positive. Yeah. So if we embed into this space H0, we get a better picture of what's going on. It turns out that we can always rewrite this PAVM super operator into this form, into two pieces. One piece is just a projector onto the space spanned by the identity. We have this piece because of PAVM normalization, which can be expressed in terms of an eigenvalue equation. So this piece is fixed. We can't do anything about that. This other piece, F0, lives entirely in this invariant subspace, H0. So the natural question to ask is what would be a good choice for F0? It's this piece here, which we can optimize for tomography. So here, this could be a good choice here. To find F0, which is just the subspace of traceless operators in this space spanned by the PAVM elements, a PAVM is called tight if the projected PAVD is a tight operator frame in F0. So by a tight operator frame, you can take this equation here as your definition. It just means that, in a sense, it's self-dual. So its dual frame is itself up to some constant. So let me describe a bit more about frames. Frames are just a generalization of bases that include overcomplete sets. So it includes 110% complete sets. Just like for bases, for every frame, there's a dual frame, such that we have this resolution of unity. Tight frames are those where the frame and the dual frame are the same thing, in a sense, self-dual, and thus a generalization of orthonormal bases. So a basis is a tight frame if and only if it's an orthonormal basis. So these are a nice object to deal with. They're very simple. It's what frame theorists like to use. So in this case, state reconstruction is kind of trivial because there's no inversion. Our dual frame is the frame itself. We have this nice state reconstruction formula in terms of this embedded space. But if we lift back into H, we just introduce this extra term on the state reconstruction formula. But we can never choose a basis for H naught, since P over M normalization always requires this linear dependence. So these tight P over Ms are very similar to orthonormal bases. They're as close as you can get without, you know, violating this condition here, or at least from my perspective. So the constant A is a measure of the purity of the P over M. You could, A is fully defined by the P over M. You can see here that this inner product is just a trace of P squared. So a rank 1 P over M will maximize this value A, and it takes its maximum value of D minus 1 on delta minus 1, where delta is the dimension of the space spanned by the P over M elements. So we have this maximum value if and only if the tight P over M is also a rank 1 P over M. And so it turns out that tomographic automality will require A to take this maximum value. We'll prove that in a second. So tight P over Ms are quite easy to construct if A is chosen small enough. So it's quite easy to choose this frame when you're around the maximally mixed state or around the origin in this H naught space. But as A is increased, we encounter regions in the Bloch sphere which don't correspond to states. They correspond to non-positive operators. So it turns out that this makes tight rank 1 P over Ms very difficult to construct. So you can ask the question whether these tight rank 1 P over Ms even exist. In the case of tight rank 1 P over Ms spanning the entire space, H, the answer is yes, because we have this second characterization. So we know that pure states are isomorphic to complex projective space. We can parametrize a pure state by a point in complex projective space. We can parametrize a rank 1 P over M in terms of a subset of complex projective space. And we have this characterization here. A rank 1 P over M spanning the entire space is tight if and only if it satisfies this condition right here. So this is precisely the definition of a weighted complex projective 2 design. So what this is telling you is that any homogeneous polynomial in complex projective space of degree 2 or less, if we take the average of this polynomial over this finite set, we get the same answer as the average over the entire space. So T-designs convert integrals into finite sums. They're approximations of functions in this space.
You have three designs, you would have two tensor products and three terms.
I would have three tensor products, yeah.
Two tensor products.
Two
sizes of tensor products.
Two tensor products, yeah.
But in general, do people care about three designs now?
They are the unique optimal measures for state estimation.
Okay, so two designs are good enough. Complicated enough.
T designs. Okay. If you're given T copies of a pure state, then they define the optimal joint measurement.
Okay.
was proven by some Japanese authors in 2004. Can't remember the names. So yeah, they're quite important. In this case, we're looking at quite simple state reconstruction, and a T-design is enough. So from the theory of T-designs, they always exist. Well, in complex projective space, they always exist, and they you can always find them of size of the order of d to the 4 or less in all dimensions. It's necessary that you have at least d squared points for your design, which is obvious because we're considering them in terms of state tomography. So that question becomes obvious when you project, when you embed into the right space. It turns out that all two designs with exactly d squared points are equiangular, and these are what are called sick PRVMs. So here are three examples of two designs spanning the entire space of quantum states. We have a sick PRVM, which is per qubit just a tetrahedron. It has d squared points. Constructions are known in some small dimensions, but not, they're conjectured to exist in all dimensions, but no one has really figured that one out. They are the unique minimal type rank one PRVMs spanning the entire space when they exist. We also have another example. We can take d plus one mutually unbiased bases. In this case, constructions are known in all prime power dimensions, but they're conjectured not to exist in non-prime power dimensions. And when they do exist, they are the unique minimal type rank one PRVMs spanning the entire space, which can be implemented by orthogonal measurements. Aidan Roy and myself have constructed a new family of weighted two designs. So in this case, we do have different weights here. And this construction generalizes to all dimensions which are prime powers minus one. So they cover many dimensions missed by the MUB, 6, 10, 12, 15, et cetera. And they can be implemented by D plus two orthogonal measurements. So it's just one more than the MUBs. So there are three examples. They're generally quite difficult to construct if you ever try. So let's now look at optimal tomography in these terms. It's just going to be the linear tomography we're all very familiar with. We don't care about positivity. Suppose we want to perform tomography on a subset of states that span some space, subspace of our full space, so it's H prime. Assume that the identity belongs to this space, and let's let delta prime equal the dimension of this space. So here are four examples. We can take the entire space itself, so the quantum states, our dimension is d squared. We can take what I call classical states, so these are just diagonal states in some basis. It has dimension d. We can define the maximally entangled state and consider entanglement-assisted process tomography in terms of state tomography on the output state, whether the probe state is the maximally entangled state. And these output states form another subspace of HCD. For unital channels, they're just the states where if you trace out either the ancilla or system, you get the maximally mixed state. We should be all be familiar with this, being experts in tomography. But and for general channels, they are a bigger space, which includes this space. They're just the states where if you trace out the system, you get the maximally mixed state. So these are the dimensions here. I've written them in terms of D, but it's an N cross N system. So D is a square dimension. So these will be our four examples we'll go through as we prove a more general result. So we need our PRVM to span a space that includes H prime as a subspace. We're going to assume a linear state reconstruction formula for all rho valid for all rho belonging to this H prime space. Here it is here. So it's just a linear reconstruction form we saw before, but in this case, we're going to assume an arbitrary dual frame. This dual frame Q prime
can be assumed to belong to this space H prime without any loss of generality. It's kind of obvious. So it means that Q prime is a dual frame in H prime to the projected frame P prime. So this is the our original P over D projected into this space H prime. So it satisfies this resolution of unity here. So there are generally many choices, of course, for the dual frame. Our first task is to show that the canonical dual is in fact optimal. So note that although our P over D is generally a positive operator, P prime can be non-positive. So we can't really assume that our P over M space is exactly our space of quantum states. Otherwise, we would neglect these possibilities. So let's suppose we're given n copies of an unknown state rho, and we perform measurements on each copy, all described by the same P over M F, and with outcomes y1 up to yn, standard tomography. Let's take the linear, what I call the linear tomographic estimate of rho. It's rho hat. It's just when we use this linear state reconstruction formula and use the frequencies as our estimates of the probabilities. And if we're going to think in these simple terms, we should use the Hilbert-Schmidt distance as our distance in this as our distance which measures the difference between rho and rho hat. It turns out if you average over the measurement outcomes, you get this nice little formula for the error. So it's written entirely in terms of the purity of the state, the dual frame, and the outcome probabilities. So now we're going to define an average error, where the average is taken over some set of orientations, but the possible orientations O between the state and the measuring instrument. And we're going to assume they have this property where if you average over all orientations, you get the maximally mixed state. So it's easiest to think about examples. So this averaging, it describes our lack of knowledge of how we should align our measuring instrument to our Hilbert space. So there's some natural choices for our different spaces. For the space of quantum states, you just take the orientations to be the unitary group. Then by Schur's lemma, we satisfy this property. For the classical states, just take the subset of all permutation matrices. For our channel spaces, we can take the subset of local unitaries, so the set of local orientations between the system and the measuring instrument, and the local orientations between the system and ancilla. So this is a natural way of just, you know, describing the fact that we don't know how to orientate our measuring instrument. The important thing is that if we take this average over our orientations, this outcome probability reduces to the trace measure tau. So now our error depends only on the purity, the state, the dual frame, and the P over M through tau. So now we want to prove our main result, and that's for all P over M's F spanning some space, including H prime as a subspace, and for all dual frames, the average error is bounded below by this quantity here, which depends really only on the dimension of the space H prime. And we obtain equality if and only if the P over M is a tight rank 1 P over M, spanning exactly the space. And we choose the canonical dual frame as our for our state reconstruction formula. So we can, oh yeah, really. We can prove this in two steps. The first thing is you minimize this sum over all duals while keeping the P over M constant. You can show that this sum is smallest if and only if Q prime is the canonical dual in this space here, H prime. So it's defined a little differently. So I won't have time to go through the details. Because now we should skip this proof. So the proof is really just stolen out of frame theory, except you need to think about probabilities a little bit. But it's quite simple. Step two of the proof. So we now know that we have to choose a canonical dual frame as our state reconstruction density. It turns out that this sum here can be written as the trace of our pseudo-inverse, where the pseudo-inverse here was projected into our space H prime. So here's step two. It turns out that for all POVMs F, spanning a space including H prime as a subspace, the trace of this pseudo inverse is bounded below by this quantity, and we get equality if and only if our POVM super operator equals the projected version of it equals this condition here, which is exactly that F is a tight rank one POVM spanning the space and no more. So here you see the condition. H naught prime is just the subspace of traceless operators in H prime. Note that equality here requires we're spanning only the space H prime. And so we can just get rid of all these sleep primes and everything and think about entirely in terms of space spanned by POVM elements. So the proof here is just to notice that this is a positive Hermitian operator. This is just the sum of the eigenvalues. You can get a lower bound just through the dimension of the space. I'll skip it. So lemma one and lemma two give our main result. Here it is restated here. Turns out that this theorem is unchanged if we replace the average error by the worst case error. The worst case error is just when we take the worst case orientation, you get the same theorem. So this is because tight rank one POVMs in fact achieve optimality or achieve the optimal error rate independent of the orientation. So we get equality for our optimal POVMs. The bound is the same. The infimum would be the same. You're minimizing the mean and the variance at once. Yeah. So when you squish it down, you're getting it. No, I'm not assuming covariance here. I'm completely general here. So here are examples. So here's the optimal error rate for our entire space of quantum states. Here's the classical case. Notice that it doesn't depend on dimension. It vanishes for pure states. It's kind of, that's good that that turned out. Here's the two error rates for the channel cases. So the question still arises whether we can actually achieve these error rates. We already know that tight rank one POVMs spanning the entire space are equivalent to weighted complex projective two designs, so they exist in every dimension. We just saw that. Turns out that tight rank one POVMs spanning the classical space of classical states is trivial. In this case, you can choose an orthonormal basis for the unprojective space, as well as by definition the H naught. The interesting case is when we look at these channel spaces, so the unitary channels and the general channels. So what happens then? In the case of unitary channels, we have a second characterization again. The extreme points, yeah. It's the same as unitary. In this case, the optimal measurements are described by weighted unitary two designs. So you can do the same kind of thing here, ask some nice questions about whether versions of sick POVMs and MUBs exist in these spaces. it's much, much harder to construct our tight rank one PAVMs in this space HUC, but they do exist. You can prove that just from convex analysis arguments. The Clifford group gives you a family, but it's not optimal. An open problem is to show that there is an optimal family. But what about the general channel case? It turns out that all the extreme points of HUC or HGC lie inside of HUC. They are the maximally entangled states. So I can never span HGC with a rank one POEM. So no, they do not exist. And D'Ariano and co-workers have recently given us the tight bound. Here it is there. No, this is my bound. This is yours. Not for the general channel case. You get something which is a bit above, right? Because no, not in the general channel case. I can. It's because. It's because the tight rank one PAVMs do not exist in this space, so I can't use this general lower bound.
Yeah.
Okay. in summary, tight PAVMs are a natural choice for an orthonormal basis quantum states. When they exist, they describe the most robust measurements against statistical error for linear tomography. An open question is, what is the exact class of optimal measurements in the general channels? And within that class, what is the simplest members of this class? I mean, you showed that, of course, the covariant POEM with a special tester will get you there, but what else can? And tight POEMs are likely to remain good choices for tomography when the linear tomographic estimate is of the stage replaced by something a bit more sophisticated, or when the Hilbert-Schmidt distance is replaced by something more appropriate. Of course, the quantum states, they're not just matrices, they have an interpretation. And this is probably true, but it's most definitely true in the limit of large numbers of measurements. So it's a good indication that these tight rank one PAVMs are a good class of measurements to be considering, but within this class, there are probably better choices. And for example, T-designs. What can be proven about these T-designs, though? It's quite difficult to get rigorous proofs. Thank you. The problem is that arbitrary unitaries are very hard to construct. I mean, that's why, I mean, to efficiently implement a unitary in a high dimensional system, it can be. Yeah, but there's going to be a standard basis, standard way that your computer is aligned. And in the end, you're going to have to rotate some through the unitary group, right? And that can be quite difficult. You know, quantum computers aren't going to be able to efficiently perform an arbitrary unitary. So it's a question about efficiency. Yeah, you do.
Now you have a new polymer that has not as much speed before.
You cite the.
And you say it's different from us.
The point is that the point is that
it works for space, it doesn't work. We have a unified framework for space.
So, it's exactly the same. Because, so, no, all the way through, I'm trying to get an if and only if condition, because I want the entire class of measurements so I can pick out the simplest ones. So it is, when you did your proof, you very quickly assumed covariance, which got you a long way very quickly. So I don't want to assume that. Yeah, I know, it's always going to be the optimal measurement, but can we do it efficiently? Can we perform this measurement efficiently? And in general, you know, random states are hard to create. Random unitaries are hard to create. So what's happening here is that the POVM elements actually living outside of this space HGC is actually, you shouldn't be choosing your POVM elements in this space now, in this case here. So the tight rank one POVMs are actually always going to be in your subspace, whereas to get optimality here, you have to get something a bit outside the space. You have to have support outside of the space you're looking at. I think that's. Yeah, I've read your paper. Yeah, I know, and thanks.
So if I
according to so for linear inversion tomography and using the Hilbert-Schmidt distance, or two-norm distance, square two-norm distance, as your measure.
So I had some intuition in choosing that, and that's the fact that Hilbert-Schmidt distance is quadratic, and linear doesn't mean you don't increase that polynomial. Mm-hmm. That's what we're getting two designs.
Yep.
So something more complicated.
That wasn't actually where I was.
I wanted to say that anyway. So go on.
I'm not going to complain about it. But in that case, the two designs are. Or any tight frame is optimal, right?
In this sense, yeah.
Including, for instance, a two design.
Yeah.
And
well, they're the same. The rank one tight frames are two designs. Exactly the same. Ultimate.
Sorry, I guess, yes, they're all two designs, but it could be just a two design, like a sick POVM, for instance.
Yeah.
So Nathan before showed that when you do maximum likelihood and you use fidelity as your criterion, then different two designs have different behavior. Like, for instance, the tetrahedron is not as good as the cube, is not as good as the icosahedron. Do you have any intuition about, you know, where that difference is coming from?
The cube is a three design, the icosahedron is a five design.
Right.
So but they're not just three designs, actually more refined.
But for your application, it doesn't make any difference. All it needs to be is a two design. Right?
Yeah, because I chose this metric for where it was. It gets quite difficult to prove when you start complicating things. I mean, that's what we resort to numerics, right? State inversion most of the time. If the maximum likelihood estimation, it becomes quite difficult to do analytically. So I can't really say much, but at least you get an intuition by looking at the simple case.
Yes. One more question. Yes, good question. Concerning random states, you mentioned they are perhaps difficult to construct, but you were working on quantum chaos some time ago. So what about the nature and you have to take the basis, let's say computational basis of orthogonal states and evolve them by a, let's say, typical, let's say, quantum mechanics system, you will get a set of orthogonal states which will be less than random.
There's only one parameter there, and that's the T in your unitary.
Okay,
so how do you ever, get an arbitrary state that way? You can get something which looks pretty close
get
to
a
it.
A set of autonomous states which are less than random, they have forms of.
Are they really arbitrary, though? It's more about orthogonality.
Yeah.
That's a one parameter family of states. So
is that generic enough?
No, yeah, I mean, you have to think in more generic. Yeah, I mean,
I won't say anything more about that kind of topic since it's, I mean, pseudo-random unitaries are a good idea, but you can never get an arbitrary random unitary, right? Because it's just, you know, provably inefficient.
You are saying that covariant rank one is not tight.
Say that again.
You are saying that you are implying sister bound is satisfied if and only if is tight.
Yeah, the ultimate measurements are not.
And the covariant is not, the covariant is rank one and is tight. So, satisfies the same. That's all.
No, because your
you
seed in your tester is getting you out of covariance is not exactly that.
No,
the seed in your tester is getting out of
the
space.
Offline. Robin has a few. Robin has some logistical arrangements which he needs to announce.
I want to apologize for interrupting the controversy. I was loving it. I feel terrible. We have a reception starting at 5:30. It's currently 5:00. So at 5:30, we can convene in the bistro. There won't really be anything formally organized, but the bistro staff will be there. We'll be glad to sell you drinks and possibly even snacks. I'm not sure. We usually serve dinner. It's on your own. So there's a half hour between, there's a banquet on Wednesday. Tonight is just social hour. So two things. First of all, there are lots of spots in the town of Waterloo to get dinner. If you're looking for dinner later on, latch yourself on to somebody local and they can take you out to the Jane Bond or to a restaurant or what the heck ever. The second thing is we have half an hour between right now and the reception. And I want to plead with you. I want to beg you, order you if necessary. Log on to the website. We have, actually, can I get somebody to flip the projector there? We have about 15 or 16 proposed sessions right now. I'd love to get even more, but even more than that, I would there's a strong correlation between the highest scores here and the ones that have been up there for the longest. That's not physically relevant. So I would love it if everyone could log on, go through, take a look at the abstract, see what turns you on, what are you interested in, vote for it, don't vote for it, whatever. But the organizers are going to start scheduling these things after the reception. So please give us some input, tell us what you're interested in. And if you don't have a computer with you, we do have computers downstairs in the library that should be accessible to everyone.
So how is the score computed? If I ignore a suggestion, is that the same as voting for it?
For the score,
number?
It is,
yes.
But the average is reported separately if you go to the page.
Yes. Primarily, if you ignore it, we're assuming you're not interested. The score is how much total interest from the whole population. But, of course, we'll use our own discretion, and we may be drunk by that.
I wasn't able to delete my proposal.
Okay. Does that mean that you want it deleted?
Yeah, I thought I would include it in my talk because it's not that long.
Point taken. If there are no other questions, go thou forth and do whatever it is you can do.